Good morning, I'm Ruth, I'm one of the pastors here. And this morning we're going to continue our series on emotions by focusing on anger. Anger, of course, is a huge subject. There are so many books written about it. How to analyze it, avoid it, manage it, let it go, make it your ally. Books for specifically for women, men, kids, teenagers, preschoolers. Anger is a huge topic because we all experience it in various forms, in ourselves and in others. And usually, though not always, it's unpleasant. When we encounter anger in other people, we might feel uncomfortable or scared. And when we get angry, we might feel self-righteous in the moment, and that can feel good actually sometimes. But we often feel guilty later for the things we say and do when we're angry, and when we realize how we've impacted other people with our anger. Obviously, anger comes in so many different forms and intensities, from irritation all the way through to murderous rage. And it's triggered by all sorts of things, from profound injustice, things like economic and racial injustice, oppression, environmental destruction, and so on, at one end of the scale, to something as trivial as someone being rude to us in the grocery store at the other end. So there's a huge spectrum. And of course, while we all experience anger, we express it differently, depending on the context, the time of the day, whether we're hungry or tired, our personality, our genetics, our upbringing, and so on. We know all of this. Anger is huge, it's complex, it's multifaceted, so we can only hope to scratch a very small part of the surface this morning in the next 30 minutes. So this is not going to be at all a comprehensive or systematic treatment of the subject, and if you're looking for that, there really are some great books out there. But we're just going to touch on a few points this morning, and the first is that anger can be a positive force. We just mentioned getting angry at injustice and oppression. We should get angry at those things. I hope we do, because that's part of empathy and valuing other people, caring about their human dignity. And such anger can drive us to advocate for and create change. And we see that kind of anger in Jesus. We read last week, Jesus became angry with the Pharisees, the religious leaders, who condemned him for healing on the Sabbath. The Pharisees cared more about religion and about appearing to be righteous than they did about the health and well-being of fellow humans, of people made in the image of God. And that made Jesus angry. Similarly, when the disciples wouldn't let children come to Jesus, they thought kids weren't important enough to interact with him. Jesus was angry with them, angry that they would deny children their human dignity and worth. The mistreatment of anyone, particularly those who are vulnerable or marginalized by society, should make us angry. And there are other ways that anger can be positive. Anger can signal danger. If you imagine a kid reaching out towards a hot stove or riding around yet again without a bicycle helmet, we yell, we get mad because we sense danger. We get mad at reckless drivers on the road because we recognize danger. Anger can be a healthy response that keeps us and others safe. There are also times when anger is not perhaps quite so justified from an objective perspective. We're not standing up to injustice and no one's really in serious physical danger, but it's just part of being human. It's neither good nor bad. Something triggers a response in us, we get angry, we deal with it in an appropriate way, and we move on. Paul, one of the early church leaders, wrote this in his letter to the Ephesians. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry. So we're expected to get angry, but not let that lead us into sin, into behavior that hurts others and ourselves. And not to hold on to our anger, but to deal with it appropriately and in a timely way. But that's easier said than done. Sometimes we know our approach to anger is not healthy. Some of us have difficulty expressing anger at all. We may deny that we feel anger and suppress it, but the problem is we do all experience anger, and denying it doesn't make it go away. Internalized anger tends to seep out in other ways, as depression, resentment, passive aggression, and so on. Others of us let anger lead us into sin. We may be verbally or even physically aggressive in the way we express anger, and of course that can be very damaging to those around us. And then some of us have problems switching off our anger. We might get appropriately angry, but then we just can't let it go. I've personally struggled with this actually. I lived overseas for a number of years in various war zones where I was pretty much constantly in a state of alert. I would quickly get angry and go into attack mode, and I think that was actually sensible in the context. It helped keep me safe. The problem for me though was when I returned home, I couldn't switch it back off. I stayed tense and angry and ready to attack. I had to retrain my brain by intentionally pausing when I went into attack mode to ask myself, am I really in danger? And of course, most of the time I wasn't. But whether our struggle is with suppressing or venting or continually carrying anger, all of those things studies have found can have physical repercussions, including increased risk of hypertension and stroke, heart disease, gastric ulcers and bowel diseases, as well as slower wound healing and a possible increase in some types of cancer. This is, of course, on top of all the relational problems that an unhealthy approach to anger causes. So while some of us struggle with anger more than others, we probably could all do with learning how to have a healthier approach to anger. At this point, I want to introduce my friend Tommy, who has graciously and bravely agreed to share some of his story as it relates to the issue of anger. Welcome, Tommy. It's great to have you join us this morning. I wonder if you could just say a few words about yourself for anybody who doesn't know you.
My name is Tommy Tavner. I've been a member at Cedar Ridge for close to 20 years now. Grew up here locally and had attended a Catholic parish for many years, and then was unchurched and found Cedar Ridge and immediately fell in love with it because they allowed me to question things, and something I didn't find at the other churches. And so I'm happy to be here. I'm active on the music team, and I sat on the board previously as treasurer. So I've been around the property for many years.
And in all my interactions with you, I think you're obviously a wonderful guy and you're funny and you seem to be really laid back and relaxed and go with the flow. But I understand that hasn't always been the case.
Yeah. So today we're going to talk about my anger. And I would say that I've always had a little bit of that in me. Maybe a lot of it at times. And even though I, on the surface, appear to be not angry, I feel like part of that I was born with, and part of it I learned from a very early age, and have worked very hard to learn about myself through this part of my personality that I've not often been very proud of.
So how did that anger reveal itself? How did that show up in your life, you say, at an early age?
Well, I think on the healthy side, the anger sometimes would be involved like with my sports. I was very competitive. I played sports a lot when I was young. And you all might remember John McEnroe used to get angry. And that was kind of me.
You're a passionate guy, right?
Yeah, I would try to, psych myself up. But unfortunately, it often went dark, and a lot of fist fights when I was a kid. Didn't always go looking for a fight, but I seemed to end up in fights a lot. And, my dad was a practicing alcoholic when I was young, and I think I learned a lot of this from him. Even though I think I was born with it, I do also think that I fostered it through watching my dad.
Right.
Yeah.
And you say it's something that you've tried to, you've not been particularly proud of, or you've kind of kept to yourself?
Yes. the word shame comes up because I never wanted to admit for so many years that I was doing this. I mean, honestly, I would hurt people's feelings and I would put people in conflict with myself because of my anger. And even though I know anger has a good side, I didn't usually practice the good side. It would lead to rage. It was not like angry, and it would lead to rage. And then when I was more quiet about it, it would lead to resentment, both very unhealthy positions to be in. And it would just Yeah, it would eat away at me, Ruth. It was, it was deep. It was very deep. Yep.
So did this show, I mean, people must have noticed that you were an angry person. Did this show up in other ways, maybe in your, you know, we've talked a little bit earlier in the message about how it can have impact on us physically as well as in our relationships. Did you notice any of that for you?
Yeah, so I approached my my mother when I was around, I was about 16 years old, and I said, I've really been having some problems with my digestive system. So she took me in, and you know, I just turned 17, and they discovered I had a peptic ulcer at a, you know, very young age. And you know, the doctor said that oftentimes this shows up because of psychology.
Right.
There's nothing, you know, they tested me for parasites and all the other things that they test for. But at the end of the day, they all felt that I was, you know, basically bringing this on myself by this stress that I was carrying that was anger.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So how did your journey progress? Did this all come to a head or, you know, I mean, how did you start moving away from a pattern of anger and shame to being the fabulous Tommy we know today?
Well, I think little by little, the people that are, you know, are most in love with me, you know, my parents, obviously, my wife, my children, they were very instrumental. I mean, even some of my very close friends, I can't stand it when you act like that, Tommy. And it just began to become apparent to me that I was driving a wedge between you know, people that love me, because I just couldn't control my outburst. They were outbursts. You know, I would go from, and people would always say this to me, they would say, you would go from cold to hot, but you're not just hot, you would be red hot, you know, just like the hot iron. And can't you go somewhere else? So, you know, there was a number of things, Ruth, that came along in my life. I know that my dad, because he was a practicing alcoholic, he got me involved in looking at 12-step from the Alcoholics Anonymous side. That was very helpful. I went to something called Adult Children of Alcoholics, but I was well into my adulthood when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Had children, and I began to sense that from it, instead, you know, it was like a flow chart. Instead of going from A to B, I had other choices, C, D, E, F, and G. And I began to see those through mentorship of others and actually admitting that I was angry, which was probably the biggest step for me. I just didn't want to admit because I was so ashamed of myself. You know, I was literally living in shame and not being very receptive, you know, from our faith of God loving me regardless and Jesus bringing me forgiveness. Of course, I couldn't believe that. I wasn't good enough to be forgiven. So yeah, it got worse and worse. So, you know, they say it's progressive, and certainly in my life, I would have to say it became progressive.
And so what flipped the switch for you? So it was interactions with your family, it sounds like, and
yep,
realizing that you were hurting them.
Yep, it was interactions with my family and friends, and it was, you know, you never say there's a singular incident, but I did have a really bad incident one Easter morning with my family that kind of, I think it really put me on the right road eventually to transform. And basically we were all, believe it or not, we were all going to church. It's when we were still practicing Catholicism, and kids wouldn't get organized. And I just had a major meltdown, and they ended up leaving without me because I said, I'm not going to go to church. And somebody had given me a gift at Christmas time, the movie. It's a Wonderful, what is the name of that movie, Ruth?
Wonderful Life.
Yes, A Wonderful Life, Jimmy Stewart. And it came with a bottle of scotch. So I went down in my basement and was drinking scotch and watching the movie. And I was 40 some years old. I had never seen that movie before. So I wept. And when my wife got home, I said, I want to change. And I don't want this to happen again. And of course it did happen a few more times, but not of the same degree, but she was there to help me along the way. She's been so instrumental in just being patient with me and understanding that I don't want to be like this. And she would often say, you can ruin your relationship in 1 second's time by being this great man and then acting like that. So that was a big, big day for me.
Right.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a, you didn't change overnight, right? So you were saying it's been a process and you've had to take steps along the way. It's a long journey.
Correct. I ended up going to a coaching class. This is when I was almost 60. And they taught me a lot about this. And I had to get up in front of like 50 people and say, I'm an angry man. And I did not want to do that. But they all, you know, a group of 50, they pick up on your dynamic and they know after you start sharing stories. And I got up and I said, I'm an angry man. And so, you know, they talked about it and they always say in this coaching class that our prime emotions are fear, anger, and sadness. And that some of us struggle with one or the other more, you know, vehemently. For me, it was the anger. And instead of them judging me, they said, every mammal has anger and some of the anger is good.
Right.
So it's where you're going with your anger. That's the problem, not the fact that you have it. And that was also instrumental. And think about it. I was almost 60 when I finally got that.
So share with us your wisdom. So if you know, we all feel anger, some of us feel more of it or more intensely or more frequently, but how do we, what are some of the things that you've learned about how you deal with that and how you channel it or lessen its impact or manage it in general? What kind of things have you learned?
Well, I think the big trigger for me is talking to somebody about it and just saying, even if it's just, you know, at home with my wife or a child or a grandchild, I'm feeling angry right now, and knowing that I can go to those other choices, B, C, D, E, and F,
right,
which could be leaving, it could be counting to 10, it could be going for a walk, it could be even, you know, that other person. Often my wife will say, do you want to talk about it? Not let's talk about it, but do you want to talk about it? And that's been really good because she knows if I just breathe and settle that it will go away or become more healthy. We can have a healthy dialogue instead of Tommy's monologue and rageaholism, I call it. you know, from the faith side, it's been prayer and meditation. I mean, I returned to prayer after many years. I think I fell out of the practice of prayer and trying to remember, somebody at Cedar Ridge shared an Henri Nguyen book with me long, long time ago. And the name of the book was, it's a compilation of his writings, and it was Prayer is the Only Necessary Thing. Mm. They gave it to me as a gift. And I started to think about that. And so I've tried to turn all action in my life prayerfully. So when I meet a client, say a little prayer before I go in, and get my heart settled. That's been really, really important. I have this habit now of acting like the Muslims. I stop my work for a few minutes every day and I, you know, I don't turn to the east or anything. I just pray for a few minutes and
but really putting that into your schedule, right? Being very intentional about that.
Very intentional. And, you know, that it takes a while to get that going. But, you know, we walk, we work out. You know, I could do this. I figured out I can do this. And, it, you know, if I do it for 2 or 3 minutes, it's amazing how helpful it is.
Right.
You know, I think I said earlier, we like to walk the dog in the morning, and I use that as meditation. I mean, sometimes my wife and I will walk for a mile and a half and not say two words to each other.
And that's not because you're angry with each other, right?
No. She doesn't struggle with anger like I do, but no, we're not angry at each other. We're just enjoying the silence, the quietude, you know? You know, and then avoiding, you know, I love the word hangry.
Uh-huh.
You know, I never knew that word. And then somebody explained, that's when you act out because you're hungry. Well, I started to think about it. I oftentimes would lose my temper when I was hungry. And I do have borderline hypoglycemia. So, you know, your sugar drops and you get all jittery. And so, you know, again, my wife, why don't you have a snack? Oh, amazing. I think I'll have a snack. So I carry, you know, like a little nut bar with me. And one of our friends from Cedar Ridge taught me about traffic. You know, a lot of us get upset when we're driving.
Right.
So he said, now when somebody cuts them off or tailgates them, he says a prayer for them. And I go, oh, you mean the guy that I'm ready to kill, right? He says, no, you pray for him. And I think it's true. I think it's true.
Yeah. It really puts you in a different frame, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Yeah. Yep. My mom would always say things like, you don't know what's going on. And maybe they're rushing ahead because someone's just had an accident. And, you know, just kind of putting yourself and reframing things, you can change those emotional pathways, I think. Right?
Yeah. And I do think, Ruth, for me, I mentioned this to you in our pre-interview, I do think that part of this, and I did learn this from a Christian psychologist, actually, I think part of this can be a form of self-righteousness, you know, that I have to be right.
Right.
You know, you're in a discussion with somebody, I'm going to be right here and they're going to be wrong. Well, that's not really the way it works, you know, because then you're a monologue person instead of a dialogue person. And like you just said, you don't know the other person's experience. So why do you need to be right? Why don't you hear what they have to say? And so that was very important to me. I don't want to be judgmental and self-righteous. I want to be fair and merciful and, you know, a good listener. So that's been good to open both ears and shut the one mouth, you know.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of practical advice there. I appreciate it. And tell us, you know, how did things end up with your dad? You'd mentioned that he was an alcoholic when you were growing up, but the situation, I think, changed, right, you were saying?
Yeah, so my dad and I were, you know, I'm one of seven children. I'm the only boy in the family.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And so my dad and I had a special engagement from a very young age, and I was always with him. He started a restaurant when I was just 12. I'd go to work with him every day. And then he really started to drink hard during those years of running the restaurant. And we were not close at all for a number of years, but he finally decided to get sober after, again, you know, not giving up on him. My dad went to rehab four times before he finally figured this out and became sober. And when he passed, I told everybody at the funeral, I'd lost my best friend. Aww. Yeah, so he was a very charismatic man.
That gives us hope that everyone can change, right?
Yes. And, yeah. And
he was defined by your anger. He wasn't defined by his alcoholism, et cetera. We can change.
Yeah, and in many ways, I was a lot like him because when he was not drinking, he was so charming and such a good listener. I mean, he was just like, Ruth is the only person in the room. You know, he would look at you and hear you and ask you questions. But when he drank, he just became Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. It was awful. And, you know, that's the way anger is. It's like fire, right? There's a very good part of anger that, you know, we can stand up to social justice issues and we can help people with issues that or just not fair. Mm-hmm. But the way we act, you know, do we become violent and let the fire out of the pit? Martin Luther King Jr. is one of my all-time favorite heroes because he's taught us to be nonviolent, but still express that anger and that unjustness. And I think that, you know, that's awesome. I mean, he was a very good historical mentor to me because I just didn't know how he didn't lose his temper. You know, when I was young and I saw him speak, I go, I would be angry. And he somehow was angry, but still expressed this just sense of, you know, integration. You know, just we're all in this together. Let's get this done. So, yeah, I think that's a good illustration for me, fire. I've always thought of anger as, you know, managing it in the pit rather than letting it burn your whole backyard down.
That's great. Thank you so much, Tommy. Really appreciate all your insights. And thank you for sharing your story with us.
Yes. And anybody at Cedar Ridge that sees this, don't worry, I won't get mad at you.
Thanks a lot, Tommy.
Thank you very much.
We've talked a little about how Jesus got angry when he encountered injustice, oppression of people who were vulnerable in society. I think it's also very instructive to look at when he didn't get angry. We've just celebrated Easter, and the Good Friday story, of course, is an amazing example of Jesus apparently not getting angry when he absolutely had every right to. Betrayed, abandoned, mocked, beaten, crucified. And yet in the midst of that, we read these astounding words. Jesus said, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they are doing." How could Jesus possibly pray for his executioner's forgiveness? Why wasn't he calling down angry curses? Equally amazing, how can Jesus expect us to behave in a similar way? Because we read in Matthew chapter 5, "You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you." Love. Love is what empowered Jesus to respond in the way he did. Love can empower us to live the same way. Love, Tommy shared, is what made him want to change and what gave him the power to change. The opposite of love is fear. We read in 1 John chapter 4, "God is love. Whoever lives in love lives in God and God in them. There is no fear in love. But perfect love drives out fear because fear has to do with punishment. The one who fears is not made perfect in love." So there are two ways we can live. We can live out of love or out of fear. And this gets at the root of anger. Anger is closely associated with fear. We get angry when we fear a loss of safety and security, affection and esteem, or power and control. You might remember those categories from last week. They're part of the welcoming prayer, which we're going to practice again in a moment. They're not obviously the only way of categorizing our basic human needs, but many people find them quite helpful. When we fear that these things are threatened, when we sense danger, when we feel rejected in some way, or when situations or even people feel that they're out of our control, we often experience that fear as anger. And the antidote to fear, says John, is love. Knowing, really knowing, internalizing the fact that we are loved infinitely and unconditionally by the creator of the universe empowers us to let go of fear. To let go of the demand for safety and security, affection and esteem, power and control. Knowing that we are loved infinitely and unconditionally empowers us to see through the anger of others to their fear. It enables us to engage them with compassion the way Jesus did. We're going to practice the welcoming prayer again right now. We're going to do this each week in the series because we're hoping that by practicing it regularly when we're probably not feeling particularly emotional, it will become a resource that we can draw on when we do feel overwhelmed with an emotion like anger or sadness or anxiety or whatever else. You might remember the welcoming prayer has three elements. First, we take a moment to become aware of the emotion that we're feeling. We listen to our heart. We recognize and we name the emotion. Second, we welcome it. We really allow ourselves to feel the emotion without judgment. Our emotions are not in themselves good or bad, but they are indicators of something that's going on inside of us. And we think about where that emotion is coming from. Do we perceive a threat to our desire for safety and security? Are we feeling unsafe or vulnerable in some way? Is it a threat to our desire for affection and esteem? Are we feeling rejected or slighted or unwanted in some way? Or do we fear a loss of power and control in a certain situation? And then thirdly and finally, we choose to let go. We recognize that we can't force our way. We can't demand safety and security or affection and esteem or power and control in that situation. And so we let go of that desire. We commit the situation to God. We rest in God's infinite and unconditional love for us. So we're going to take a few minutes now to practice this prayer. We have an image on the screen, or you might like to just close your eyes if you feel comfortable doing so. And just take a moment to settle your mind. Quieten your thoughts. And listen to your heart. What is on your heart this morning? Is there anything heavy? Anything that's weighing on you? You might feel that in a certain part of your body. It can be helpful to put your hand over it, maybe your neck, or your shoulders, or an uncomfortable feeling in your stomach. What emotion are you feeling? Name it to yourself. It might be anger, anxiety, sadness, whatever it might be. And we're going to welcome that emotion. We're going to sink into it and really feel it. Don't analyze it, just allow yourself to really feel it. Recognize that this is an indicator, something that helps us understand what's going on inside. Think now about where this emotion is coming from. Is it a desire for more safety or security? Is it a desire for more affection and esteem? More power and control. Now let's give the situation to God. Let's remember that we are beloved children of God. Each one of us is wonderfully made. God delights over us with singing, delights over you with singing. You make God's heart glad. And in that context of total love, we can dare to let go. might like to open your hands, palms up, as a way of indicating letting go. Because of God's love for us, we know we can trust God with our desire for safety and security, our desire for affection and esteem, our desire for power and control. We let go, knowing we are loved, knowing we are held. Knowing God is with us and for us. Amen. As for each of the weeks in this series, you'll find the welcoming prayer together with discussion questions, which can be downloaded from our website. So do check that out. The URL is on the screen. And now Stacey is going to lead us in communion.